All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest today is Sam Baltrusis. Ball like the
bounce the ball.
Yeah, I thought ball like the god, you know.
Oh, well, that could be that too.
Right.
If there was another A in it.
Right. Yeah. Well, if there was another L in it, then Kara.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's just interesting. Your mind went there. That's all I'm saying.
You know. Okay. So tonight we're going to be talking about sort of the haunted history of Salem. Of course, we all associate Salem with the witch trials,
right?
And you know, I bet you people are on the border as to if that was even fact or fiction. Well, I mean, of course, it was fact that it happened to these women. I just mean the witch part of it. And then the ghost part of it. And then, you know, so it leads one to think, like, is there something shady going on in Salem that connects these things? Or is this just sort of a carried on legend? You know, how much stuff outside of the witch trials are we talking about? I guess through years alone, we're probably looking at quite a bit of history.
Yeah, so it's happened in 1692. So 20 innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft. What's interesting about the whole twist when a ghost comes to the witch trials is I'm actually related to the bad guy. So the major accusers during the Salem witch trials, which is the Putnam family. So the Putnams were responsible for accusing 66 people altogether, and almost 150 people were accused and executed for witchcraft. I mean, that's not true. We're accused of witchcraft.
Right. But that's even a lot more than I would thought were actually accused at the time.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that were accused. So it was literally like neighbor against neighbor. So the Putnam family accused their neighbors, like Rebecca Nurse was their neighbor. So it was an ongoing feud with my family and the town family, who had three sisters who were accused, including Rebecca Nurse, Mary Easty, and the third Sarah Cloyce, who wasn't executed. But that family has been kind of like a family rivalry with the Putnams and the Ghoul family, who I'm also related to.
And their last name is Gould?
Yeah, G-O-U-L-D.
Oh, Gould. All right.
It's interesting to me that some people were accused but not, like, executed, because that implies that someone was, like, applying this some kind of standard to where it's like, yeah, I don't think this guy is consorting with the devil, but she's got shifty eyes, you know, like, what? It's... I don't know. My only like knowledge of this comes from like the play The Crucible. So I think like a lot of people, I just have in my mind just this image of sort of out and out hysteria, just everyone accusing everyone else. So,
well, I spent a lot of time. The Crucible is a great work of fiction. So a lot of people, that's their only take on the Salem witch trials.
Right.
Exactly. It's the play by Arthur Miller. And there is some truth in it, that a lot of the names are factually correct. And a lot of the tests that were given, they had, you would have to say the Lord's Prayer. And if you didn't say the Lord's Prayer correctly, then you were accused of witchcraft. But the ones that were actually executed were the ones that pled innocent to being a witch, which is really fascinating. The ones that pled guilty were kept in the witch dungeons for months, and they were eventually exonerated. So if you pled innocent, you had to go to trial, and then you were possibly executed.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. If someone asked you if you're a witch, you want to say yeah.
Right, yeah. That was a smart thing to do if you knew what was going on. Like, yes, I'm a witch.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Counterintuitive. Yeah. Totally counterintuitive to what they were thinking at the time, though. You know, that they're all, whoa, not me, you know. I don't. How many, you know, of the hauntings, you know, a lot of old towns have hauntings just based on their history and stuff. So, and then we associate so much of this with the witchcraft of Salem. Is the witchcraft of Salem something that permeates through the hauntings throughout the years, or are the hauntings more associated with other histories, or does it tend to be wrapped up in that?
I find that the land is stained with blood. So what happened in 1692 has left a psychic imprint on the land. So I do think that a lot of the hauntings associated with Salem have ties to the Salem witch trials. Hmm. However, you know, there are some hauntings that are more recent. There's a woman known as the Lady in the Blue Dress that haunts a place called Rockefeller's. And she was supposedly murdered in 1830. There's other hauntings that are associated with Salem that aren't tied to the witch trials. But I will say that pretty much everything has a root to the Salem witch trials and the hauntings associated with the Salem witch trials.
Yeah, so I guess the belief could be that whether the witchcraft or not was real, that the trauma was real enough that the hauntings would persist.
Right, yeah, so when you, one gentleman, Giles Corey, was pressed to death over a 2, maybe 3 day period, and he was stripped naked, a board was put on top of his body, and then rocks were put on top of the boards, so he was smushed to death. And if I was pressed to death over a 3 day period, I would haunt Salem as well, and his ghost is one of the many hauntings associated with the witch trial still sticking around.
Really?
Yeah, must look like a flounder.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was a horrible way to go. Yeah, he probably did look like a flounder.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I guess let's start off with what you consider to be the biggest, not biggest, but biggest as far as importance or anything, haunting in the area. Like what, when we think of haunted Salem, what story would we associate with that?
So I've written 13 books altogether. Two of the books are on, one's called Ghost of Salem, and the other one's called Wicked Salem. So I would say, there's not, one haunting that is, the granddaddy of all the hauntings. I will say that there are locations that have more reports than other locations, like the Central Burying Ground, which is in the heart of Salem, and it's a very old cemetery. Also, Howard Street Cemetery, which is where Giles Corey was pressed to death. There's been multiple reports of seeing a man wearing old, date back many, many years. Those locations also have hauntings associated with them as well, including the Gardner Pingree Mansion. And that's where Captain Joseph White was murdered by Richard Crowninshield. And that murder has left a psychic imprint on the mansion. And it's still there. People report seeing a woman. They say that the murderer actually replays itself over and over again. And if you watch my episode of A Haunting, I was in the 100th episode of A Haunting, I actually picked up the murderer's, an attachment from the murderer, Richard Crowninshield, and it nearly killed me. So that house, in my opinion, is one of the most haunted locations, I would say probably in the country. It's a very haunted house.
I'm not familiar with that one. What was the situation of the murder?
So 1830, Captain Joseph White was a sort of like a town. He was a trader, so he made his money from selling goods, including Africans. So he was a slave trader as well. He had a lot of money. He was getting to the end of his life, and he never had any children, or he wasn't married. So his niece was kind of like wanting to have the property. So the story is that he. That she hired her husband and his brother to kill him. So they reached out to the local black sheep, which is Richard Crowninshield. This is April of 1830. He breaks into the mansion. He has an Indian club, so it's this large stick, and he has a dagger. So he takes the bludgeon, hits him over the head, and that actually killed him, but that wasn't the end of the murder. He took the dagger and stabbed him 13 times around the heart. When I told that story, I actually somehow channeled Richard Crowninshield, the one that committed the murder, and that spirit took over my body, and that was featured on a haunting. It was like I actually took on the bad guy in a channeling session. I didn't know I was doing it, and I wasn't able to push him out. So his spirit's still around too. In fact, I actually, had an attachment with his spirit or his the entity.
How does that work? Like when something takes over your body, do you step outside? Are you seeing it happen? Are you not even aware that it's happening?
It's kind of weird. So when it was happening, it was the day before Halloween, and I was giving a kind of a spooky story discussion at a mansion, and I started telling the story. So I was basically playing Richard Crowninshield, the bad guy. And I played him so well that I was channeling him. So I was getting information from him in my mind's eye. And then I was like talking to him and asking him questions. And so before I knew it, I did it. I was kind of exhausted after I gave the presentation, and they were like, that was the best presentation, best reenactment of Richard Crowninshield I've ever seen. And I looked in the mirror and I looked like I had like jagged teeth, and I just looked off, like something was wrong. And I go home, and on the way home, I actually tried to, I felt like out of control. Like I was like, my body was doing like weird things. And my hand tried to open the door. And the car that my friend Mike was driving me back home. And he's like, what's wrong, Sam? What's going on with you? And I'm like, something is not right. Something is wrong. So it was an 8-day process of going in and out of consciousness with this entity. So I would wake up and I had posted things on Facebook, on Messenger. I was looking for like a dead skeleton of a real person. And they're like, well, we have a fake skeleton. And I'm like, no, I want a real skeleton. Like weird kind of macabre things that were happening. Mm-hmm. So when I was going in and out of consciousness, at first I was like, almost like the back of my head. I thought I was sick. So I thought maybe I was just really, really exhausted, but he was kind of got to the point where he was like kind of running the show. And my friend Joni Mahan, who was a fellow author, and she had an attachment that nearly killed her too, recognized what was going on. She reached out to our shaman friend, Michael Robichaud, who did a removal. And I saw the entity literally leave my body and fight his spirit guides. And this is the beginnings. I identify as a clairvoyant, so I see dead people. And it's something that I've always had. But after that removal, it kind of opened up my third eye. So I was able to see things now clearer than I've ever been. And now I realized that I was channeling him, and I didn't push him out. So I wasn't trying to channel him. It just happened naturally.
So it sounds like hauntings. Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like these hauntings can be dangerous.
They can be dangerous, especially if you have an ability to channel a murderer. It really depends. Just like spirits, just like people, if you were a good person in life, you're going to be a good spirit. If you were a murderer or a darker entity, some of the entities haunting Salem weren't actually people. There's a lot of like shadow figures and a lot of things that have been conjured over the years. And you can, whatever you want to call them, like thought forms, tulpas, or egregores are roaming the streets of Salem. So these are entities that have been conjured by weekend witches. So they come in and they do like a summoning curse or spell, and things have been conjured. And there's a couple of shadow people in Salem that I've encountered over the years, and other people have encountered, that I don't think were actually humans before. So these are thought forms.
Carrot. No.
So like all these people who come, just for a good time, they're, dabblers, they, throw around some crystals, say some magic words, that is actually like polluting the psychic whatever, that is like having an effect.
Yeah,
that's it horrifying. Is. I
know. That's it really the worst is. They're like they sell candles in the like the witch shops, and they sell the candles to like conjure a ghost. And you know what? Sometimes they do, and it is terrifying. And imagine all these people coming from all around trying to conjure things. They're able. Some of them are able to do that.
Yeah, that's the first thing that crossed my mind when Kara said that, was like, it must be all the worse in Salem, because nobody's coming to my town to do this, but you guys have a whole tourism industry based around this.
We do, and some of the stuff that they conjure up is horrible, horrible entities. And a lot of times I really question that the spirits that are haunting Salem are actually from 1692. We do tell the stories over and over again. And I'm like, is it something kind of mimicking that one of the victims of the witch trials, because you can get that too. So we're dealing with shadow people. I've had an encounter, and other people have had an encounter with an entity wearing a hat, or can't say the word because it's actually trademarked, but it's the man with a hat entity, which had red glowing eyes. So there are monsters walking the streets of Salem, Massachusetts, and I don't know how they were pulled over from another dimension. It probably is these weekend witches that are doing it, or something else.
Okay, so, you know, I'm sure Kara knows that this question is coming from me, because I'm always interested in this. Is these entities from other places, like witchcraft is associated with Christianity. Christianity is the one that, you know, did them in, or at least under the guise of Christianity. You know, are these other entities demons, or is there another world? I'm always kind of interested in if there is another world, there must be a culture that goes with it. I'm always curious on any insight that I can get into a being that's not from here. So me leaving an echo, or me leaving my soul, that makes some degree of sense to me. But when we're dealing with an entity from literally God knows where, you know, where are we talking about? I guess is my question. I don't know. I realize it's a very loose question, but I'm assuming it's a pretty loose answer given our understanding of all this stuff.
Yeah. So it's something that, you know, like if I had to explain what I've encountered, I would say that some of the entities are not human. Now, where do they come from? I another dimension. And so would the other dimension be hell? You could say that. Or would it be like the third dimension, or you know, another planet? That could be possible too. There could be some sort of like tear in the portal between us, you know, our plane and the other plane, and this thing has come through. Now, I do know that some of the shadow people that I've encountered, and other people have encountered in Salem, are they could actually be former humans. So they may have, like, over the 300 years of being a spirit, they may have kind of morphed into something really nasty and negative, or they were their thoughts were. So I don't really know like what I would call the other realm that they come from, but I do know that there's sort of a consistent theme to these shadow people, and they take the shape of people, but they're not people. You know, like they're humanoid in shape, but they're not people. They're monsters.
And you know, go ahead.
The other question that popped in my mind about this was, you were saying that it can be dangerous. So let's say we got a haunted building, and it can be dangerous if you go in and you're clairvoyant, you can be attached. But let's say I'm a hobo traveling through town, and I go into that same building and spend the night there. Is there any danger for that guy?
I think that you have to have a certain amount of sensitivity to the spirit realm to do it. But I have seen people that didn't know that they had that sensitivity, including myself. I mean, I've always been kind of sensitive and had a really strong intuition, but I was so far in denial that I was like, you know, the idea of channeling was just not possible for me. Like, I'm like, that's not possible. So I think that if you have that sensitivity, or whatever that is, that connection to the spirit realm, it could be a danger for you if you have that sensitivity.
I see. So, you know, when people come through to, you know, I've found that a lot of these places, when we talk to people about the places, when people come through Salem, are the places that they're visiting, let's say on a haunted tour or something, are those the actual haunted places, or are those just the souped up places, and the true haunted places are over here?
Yeah, so a lot of people, when they come to Salem, they expect it to look like 1692. And there are still some buildings that are standing that are from that era. But a lot of the locations, we do bring them to where it happened. But when you have people coming on my tours, they're like, well, it actually happened in Danvers and Peabody. And that's true, because Salem was a lot larger in space in 1692. So the actual witch hunt took place in modern day Danvers. And where I picked up the attachment of Richard Crowninshield actually happened in Topsfield. So, but back in the 1692, that would have been considered Salem. So I guess if anything, like the actual witch hysteria was a much larger strip of land. But when we do the tours, we do talk about locations that do have ties to the haunting. So the places, downtown Salem is probably, I would say, like the most haunted. Like there's Essex Street, which is like the main drag in Salem. And there's a lot of locations on that strip. And some people say that there's a ley line from down that stretch of land. And the ley line is sort of like something that's going beneath the surface. And if you look at the actual, what Essex Street is, there was what was known as Judges Row. So in 1692, the judges in the witch trials of the magistrates actually lived on that line. And at the very tail end of that line, that's where the executions took place. So there's kind of like a straight line of hauntings. And some say that it's the ley line. It's in the land.
Interesting.
So seeing how we haven't heard of Danvers and we have heard of Salem, I'm going to assume that Danvers is a much smaller town.
It is. It's right on the outskirts of Salem, and it incorporated to Danvers. So it was considered a Salem village in 1692, and it was incorporated like about 100 years later, but yeah, so it's smaller. I wouldn't say it's downtown Salem was considered Salem town, and that's where most of the action took place. But the people that were accused of witchcraft lived in modern day Danvers, which was considered Salem village, or Peabody, which is smaller than Danvers, and that's where some of the victims lived too, and that was considered Salem Village as well. So I think the actual people accused of witchcraft lived more in Salem Village, but there were a few people from Salem Town, which we know today as Salem, who were accused and executed as well.
Well, here's where I'm going with this. I assume that Salem, being larger, enjoys some level of this tourism and stuff. And I'm curious if Danvers and what is it, Peabody? If they enjoy it as much, being smaller communities. Or are they like, oh crap, it's these Twilight fans again or something, you know?
I think that when it comes to, like, say, Danvers and the Historical Society in Danvers, they want the people to come to commemorate the innocent men and women who were accused of witchcraft, but they don't attract the weekend witches or the tourism industry that Salem does. And really, people in Salem, they're not there a lot of times for the Salem witch trials history. I think that the other cities are more, I guess, a little bit more not a tourism, you know, you don't go to Danvers to honor the witch trials victims. I think if you go, like myself, I go to Danvers a lot because a lot of the memorials for the witch trials victims are in Danvers. So it's more like the place to go to honor the victims and to pay respects to them. But Salem is where you go to party and have and put on a witch hat and and conjure ghosts.
Be the Reverend Ecker. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
What's your you're clairvoyant. And you obviously, you know, believe in the ghosts, believe in the history and the stuff. What's your take on witchcraft? I mean, do you believe that witchcraft was just a misnomer, or do you think that it was wholly and fully a thing that was going on? What's your take there?
Well, I will definitely think that the people that were accused by my cousin Ann Putnam Jr. were not witches. So they would have things that they would do that would be considered witchcraft back in the day. But if you did anything,
like a sage bomb or something,
right? If you had a poppet, which was a common practice, you would put like a poppet in your house to ward off evil spirits. Mm-hmm. Then that was used. That was considered witchcraft as well. There were a lot of women specifically that were like nurses that created like Pepto-Bismol, like stuff for your stomach. If your stomach was, you know, achy, they would create these kind of cures, and they were considered witches for doing that. So I think a lot of it really there were people that had superstitions that were brought over from England. And I think the Putnams did stuff too that would be considered witchcraft back in 1692. So they were calling the kettle black, that they also were doing the same thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think any of it was witchcraft at the time?
I think that looking back on what I know today as witchcraft is very different. I think that Tituba is sort of like, she's the she's from Barbados, so she's been portrayed as like this African American voodoo priestess, which is not true. She was actually lighter in skin, and she was in the house of the neighbors to the Putnam family. So it was so there was the Paris Foundation, which is the house that's still, that's not still standing, but it's still, you know where to go to see this house. And it was like ground zero to the Salem witch trials. So there was Abigail Williams was in the house, Betty Paris, who was the first girl to be afflicted, and Tituba. And Tituba would kind of gather the girls, and they would do kind of like, they were called, it was like a Venus glass, so the kind of like they would look for their, it was kind of like fun, like young girl stuff. You know, like they were trying to see who they were going to marry, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And she would, so Tituba was showing them these things, and they felt like those things, like we would view today, like say like a spirit board or a Ouija board, may have conjured something, may have done something, but I don't think that she was a witch. I just think she did things that were against the status quo at the time.
So she was that time's equivalent of your tourists today who are accidentally bringing about badness, or
exactly,
or possibly
that you're
speculating here.
Right.
Yeah, that prompted a question. I realize a lot of these are questions maybe you've been asked before, but you know, we haven't had a person from a witch town on before. So what's your take on the ergot? You know, that's always passed around that maybe it was ergot or some other sort of mold or psychedelic that made people see things and believe things.
Yeah, so that's a great theory. So it kind of hit the... people were talking about it in the 70s. And so Linda Corporell is the one that came up with the theory. And I get asked about the ergot poisoning theory over and over again. It's like, oh, they ate ergot. So ergot is like this fungus among us, or like this mold on the moldy bread. And if you really look at what happened, and I looked into that, like I was like trying to like really, maybe that is a viable theory. And really, if you had ergot poisoning, you would lose body parts. So you would lose like a nose or an ear. There were fatal side effects to having ergot poisoning. So I really looked at trying to find out what happened to the people, the girls that were the afflicted girls that were accusing innocent people of witchcraft, if they had any long-term ailments. And if you look at my cousin Ann Putnam Jr., who was the major afflicted girl, she did die young, but not from ergot poisoning. So she actually ended up living in her 30s. She was the only one to publicly apologize for accusing innocent men and women of witchcraft. So she did make an apology before she passed.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Kara, go for it.
So if you're like in Salem today, I'm just, cause we've kind of heard about this from other sort of ghost people. Are there any places that you would think of that, you know, may or may not be haunted, but just have like an atmosphere of sort of like, you know, spookiness or darkness, like you go there and it's like, oh, something's off, you know, is there anywhere like that in your experience?
Well, I mean, pretty much anywhere in Salem is like that, really. It really is. I mean, I'm telling you, like, just moving. Vibe on the street is like that. But the central burying ground or Charter Street Cemetery, there's a little house that's called the Samuel Pickman House. And I have had photos and weird things happen in this house on my tours over and over and over again. Well, guess what? They just opened it up to the public on May 1st. And it's going to be kind of like to be able to, you can go inside to check in and get into the cemetery. So it's kind of like a visitor center. And people have looked at this house from the outside for years and years. And now it's opened up to the public. So I would say go to check out the Samuel Pickman House. And it's, what's interesting about the house, it dates back to the 1600s. It looks like the houses looked like in the time. And it was it's an oddly good shape because it was buried in a mansard roof of a Victorian mansion for years. So that was like, it was like part of the roof, and they found this like 1600s house stuck in a roof. And so I would say, check out that location. check out the Hawthorne Hotel. The Hawthorne Hotel only dates back to the 1920s, but when you walk in, you can feel the energy in the hotel. And that is the place to go if you're staying in Salem, but there are other haunted locations, like other haunted hotels in Salem too. But if you could afford the Hawthorne Hotel, I would say stay at the Hawthorne Hotel. Cemeteries in Salem are big, and I think a lot of stuff has happened in the cemeteries that would cause it to be haunted, like the Howard Street Cemetery, like the Central Burying Ground. And also, go outside of Salem. There's what is known as Proctor's Ledge, and that is right behind a Walgreens, of all places. So there, that's where the innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft. It's not a sexy location. I go, where's Proctor's Ledge? And it's like, where were they hanged for witchcraft? And I'm like, well, it's right behind a Walgreens.
Great. So I can get mouthwash and toilet paper too.
And pay respects to innocent men and women for witchcraft. Right, yeah. We knew about that location for years, and they just recently came out and they built a memorial for the victims. And they always said it was Gallows Hill because that was, a less touristy place to go. And they didn't want people to go out to do whatever they're going to do. But this is like in a residential area, and they didn't want it to be in a residential area.
I see. Seeing how Salem is a town in the United States, I can only assume that it has a decent Christian population. How do the local churches feel about these things? Like when you have festivals and stuff, do they come out and protest, or are they just sort of a part of the history? And, because I know some churches are all, yay, it's Halloween, who cares? And other churches are just all, how does Salem churches react to these events?
Well, I will say this, like what's so fascinating about Salem is why do actual modern day witches like Lori Cabot come to Salem? Like why do we have such a large modern day witch population in Salem? And I would say like that is why that we've had people protest in the past saying you're going to go to hell if you come to Salem. It's the devil's town, it's hell town. There has been a lot of protest over the years from the extreme zealot Christians, evangelicals, saying that people that come to Salem are kind of dabbling in the occult by just coming to Salem. I haven't seen it recently, and maybe it's because it's just, I don't know, like maybe there's been other things to focus on, like COVID. I don't know like why, but I haven't seen it in about 10 years or so. But it was part of the landscape. There was a gentleman who would hold a plaque in downtown Salem, like handing out literature, saying that everyone that was in Salem was going to go to hell if you came to Salem.
I know, it's like, yay. That's a pretty blanket statement.
Yeah, I know, right?
It includes that guy, presumably.
Like, probably, yeah. And people would actually take their picture with that guy too. Like they were, it was like he was part of like a local. He was like a local fixture.
But I assume everybody moved there for the same reason that everybody moves to where Kara's at, to be close to Jimi Hendrix's grave. If you want to be a rocker, you might move to Seattle. You want to be a witch, you get a bus ticket to Salem.
And I think that's a large portion of why people move to Salem. Mm-hmm. I think that it's actually become an enclave for the other. So people that are different in any way, you go to Salem because you're sort of like embraced in Salem for being a freak. And that's why I love Salem. I love Salem because you don't have to be a certain way. You can wear all black and and have vampire wings in Salem. It's part of the culture.
Huh. That's pretty cool. I think of most
clearly the target demographic for this. Yeah. I think of
most towns that are freaky liberal to be on the and I mean freaky socially liberal. I'm not making a political statement, but I think of most of them as being on the West Coast. I'm glad to know that there's one in the middle of Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts is a freaky liberal state. It's probably like the East Coast like freaky liberal like bastion, and that goes back for many years, and probably out of guilt. If you look at, we've done such like when we were during the witch trials era, and even during the American Revolution, we did the Puritans were really really like tight-lipped and bad people. They did a lot of bad things in the name of their religion, and I think that there's sort of like they kind of flip the script. They're like, wait a minute, we were horrible people. We're going to redeem ourselves and actually be liberal, good people, and actually take care of people and not like hang them for witchcraft.
Yeah, outside of the town that Kara and I are from, there's another town called Arcata that was sort of a running joke for me and my friends, like because friends would move there and somebody would be all, oh, we're moving to Arcata. And I'd be all, well, I give you 6 months until you're a pansexual fire breather, because like something about Arcata, just like all of a sudden people are just all, oh yeah, I'm a professional hula hoopist now. I'm just, of course you are. You moved to Arcata, you know, that's what happens. And I love those towns for that, because you know that there's just like this place out there where, I don't know. Makes me think of Nightbreed and Midian, which is probably a deep horror movie cut for me that you guys aren't going to get. So you take people on tours. And, how long's a tour? And how do you take them around? I've never done one of these, and I've always wondered, like, do you own a big bus like the Electric Mayhem, or do you, like, drive your car and they meet you there? Like, how does this even work?
Well, to kind of give you an idea, so I gave tours for 10 years, and I really haven't given a tour since COVID. And I don't know if I'm going to actually continue giving tours, because there was so much protocol when it comes to COVID and giving tours. But when I do give a tour, it's a walking tour. So my tours are a lot of history. I tend to shy away. I don't really do the haunted tour of Salem because everybody else does it. But if you come to Salem, there are so many tours in Salem that you're bound to get a tour that you want, you know? And so tours with me, having written two books and I've been on television a lot. So if I walk down the streets of Salem, people are like, you know, like, hey, you know, they kind of gather around me like I'm like a rock star or something in Salem. Awesome. So it's not as easy as for me to do it as it was like 5 years ago. But I will say that, that the regulations now are very difficult to give tours in Salem.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, this is a question I always ask, and I can't help but ask you, being haunted and in Salem, you know, other than you being possessed by the, or attached by the guy, well, let me ask you this first. How do you keep doing what you're doing after being attached by a guy and basically potentially almost dying? You know, how do you say, oh yeah, I'm going to go back in there?
Well, I didn't for years. So it was Halloween, and then it took me about 7 months. And what's good about that, though, I mean, not to say getting an attachment's good, but I had 7 months to recover from that. So it was at Halloween, and our busy season really starts in the summer to October, and it kind of culminates on Halloween, and then you're done for a few months. So there's like a down period. So I had a lot of time to recover, but I don't give ghost tours because of it. I just talk about the history, and I'm afraid if I talk about the paranormal part of it, that somehow it's going to happen again. So I do, but I do it very tentatively and very safely.
What about this author friend of yours, a woman? You said that she had an attachment that almost killed her. Does she have the same feelings, or is she getting back on the horse? You know, what's up with that?
Yeah, so her name's Joni Mahan. She actually was based in Massachusetts, but now is living in Indiana. She actually is a tour guide. She runs a tour called Haunted Harmony. So she's a tour guide as well. And she and I both are we actually co-host a radio show called Paranormal Rewind every Tuesday night on KCOR. And so she and I still give tours. We kind of get back on the saddle, but I will say that my protection skills are so much better now. I've had to learn like trial by fire to protect myself, and I do what we call a crystal shield of protection, where we kind of have a bubble of protection when we head out. So it's like armor heading out to battle when we go out in the field.
How does that work? Is that like building a callus, or is that like performing a?
It's like a ritual. I'll show you. So I have, these are my selenite harmonizers. So you imagine, you take a small ball, like you have like a, think of like a small pebble, and you're going to blow, like breathe into it. So you take the air through your nose, out your mouth. Then you start pushing it, creating a bubble around you. This is all kind of like imaginary. And you start doing chanting, Ura Shokriyo, Ura Shokriyo. And then you chant and you create a bubble of protection around you. So it's like a ritual that you do.
I see. And okay, so what I was going to ask you is, sorry, did you have a question, Kara?
Just interjecting. Go ahead.
What I was going to ask you is, outside of this, you know, what's your scariest experience doing this? You know, what's your moment?
So I'm, in addition to being related to the Putnam family, I'm also related to Lizzie Borden as well. And so I know it's kind of a weird cop. I'm like related to all the bad guys in history. And I'm not even from Massachusetts, by the way. I'm originally from Florida and I went to college here. And so I was kind of called here. So I would say the energy associated with Lizzie Borden is the most terrifying for me. Not only because of my family ties to Lizzie Borden, but there's something sinister in the house where the murders took place. Like there's something going on in that house. So when I stay in that house, something like it's a bad feeling when I go there. And it's also like Salem is investigated over and over and over again. So is it original ghost or is it something that people conjured?
Right.
You know, I had the weirdest thing the other day. Somebody told me Lizzie Borden was like 40 when she hacked the family to death.
She was 32, and people are surprised. They think that she's a teenager.
Yeah,
but she was in her 30s, and that's still kind of old for what you think of Lizzie Borden.
Yeah, I was totally surprised by this. I'm just all like, and yet they still thought she was so innocent and couldn't have done it and stuff. I'm just all, I don't know. It's like pretty.
Yeah.
Well,
when you dive into this case, it gets more and more complicated. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, well, I mean, I felt like that she did do it. And trying to explain why someone that doesn't have any signs of like of being a murderer would do it. But if you look at a sort of like our family curse, we have a lot of murderers in our family. Let's just put it that way. And so
well,
it's almost like
you're on the East Coast then.
Exactly. but they're all women though, just to say so right. It's genetically predisposed. think about all the females, the killers that you may hear about. And also there's been a lot of victims in our family too. So it's not just the women murderers, but we're also connected to
kill someone.
Right. yeah so there's definitely a lot of female killers in our family, and it's really fascinating. Like if you look at us, our family genetically, and is there a family curse,
kind of like I don't know if you guys have ever read this, but The Witching Hour by Anne Rice, that there's sort of like the family ghost that follows. It mostly follows the women, and people think they're witches, but they're not really witches. They're followed by an entity that basically helps them perform this, and they're basically kind of cursed by it. It's been a long time since I read it. I might have summed that up incorrectly.
Well, I have to read that book because that's exactly what I think is going on.
there's three in the series, and it's really well done. You know, The Lizzie Borden always had parallels to me, and why I think it's so interesting. It always had parallels to me to the Amityville Horror, where it sort of just seemed like from out of the blue, you know, somebody went ape caca and just like, you know, killed their family. Like they were sort of, I don't know. I there's a concept here that I can't put my mind around. And there was also an episode of X-Files where it was like evil walking from person to person, or the movie Fallen of evil walking from person to person. And it's not too dissimilar from your own attachment case where you felt that evil was attached to you. I find that really interesting. And I wonder how much of it goes on in this world.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask, you have your whole book, Wicked Salem, all about like sort of the violent things that happened in Salem. Would you say that, like disregarding the witchcraft, the hauntings, all that, would you say like that Salem has more of these kinds of violent things in its past than other towns, you know?
I would say, so Salem specifically, no, like if you look at the historically, I think that there was a lot of like post-mortem, like penance for the people. So after the witch trials, like the violence, it's minimal. So it's like you have, when there was a murder in Salem, you know about it. So like Captain Joseph White was murdered. There was a recent murder that was a woman that was murdered, and that was like national headlines as well. So if there's a murder in Salem, and compared to other places, it's going to make national headlines. So I would say, like statistically wise, no, but the weirdness associated with the crimes, yes. Like there's like everything that happens to the murders, there's something weird about it. Just like the Lizzie Borden case, there's something weird about the murders.
Right.
Yeah, not a lot of murders, but they're weird.
Not a lot of them, but the ones that do happen are strange.
And I would assume that when it came to gruesome, actual bad things going on, the leadership of Salem was probably not unlike Angela Merkel when somebody brings up Adolf Hitler. They're probably all like, whoa, man, this is not us. You know, they're probably a little overprotective when it comes to the actual terrible things that happened there, which I'm sure happen everywhere.
That's really, I mean, so the idea that Salem kind of embraces like the tourism industry, they do, but kind of tentatively. Like there were years and years and years of sweeping it under the carpet or putting in the skeletons in the closet. They did not want to be known as the place where innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft. Right. And you see that over and over again. There was a lot of like denial happening. But when Arthur Miller's The Crucible came out, it kind of shined a new light on the witch trials. And instead of like fighting it, they kind of embraced it. And so I think that that you'll still find people who don't want to talk about the witch trials. It's almost like ingrained in us to be ashamed of it, like Auschwitz, like Hitler. You want to like move on, and like you'll see it. People that grew up in Salem, they're like, I'm so tired of talking about the witch trials, and but everyone comes to Salem to see that and see the witches, and they just kind of have to kind of put up with it. I will say that the locals, they want to be they like the tourism, but it's also, imagine like your home being taken over by like thousands of people every year. It can get annoying, but when you move to Salem, you sign up for that. But you have people that have been like long time locals that have been in Salem their whole lives, and they didn't sign up. They were kind of born into it. It really has grown into this tourism industry that wasn't the case like in the 70s. Like it's grown and grown and grown over the years. And a lot of people that have been around, like the old timers, are like, what is going on? Like, I'm moving to Danvers.
Right. Yeah. Well, I understand that. I live in Ashland, Oregon, which is based around a different kind of freaky yearly festival. We have the Shakespearean festival, and the population is like 20,000, and 300,000 people come through every year for all the Shakespeare stuff in the streets. I wonder how, and you might not know this, I'm just going to wonder aloud, how Salem fared through the satanic panic and stuff of the 80s. I can imagine it might have been a weird combination of history and the news.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the satanic panic was really alive and well in Massachusetts. So if you look at a lot of the cases in Massachusetts, so around Salem, like there was the Fall River cult murders that happened in Massachusetts, and there was like this whole Satan, there were like Satan worshipers. What's interesting about Salem is there actually is a Church of Satan in Salem, and it's like one of the headquarters. So it's almost kind of they talk about the satanic panic and actually compare it to the hysteria of the witch trials. So I think it's kind of part of local Salem discussion, like the satanic panic. But I also think that it's happened all around us in Massachusetts.
Well, you happened upon a word that's one of our keywords around here, something we're very interested in, and that's cult. What is the Fall River cult? I have never heard of this. I'm totally interested.
Well, what's interesting about this case, and I wrote a book called Mass Murders, and this case was featured in it. So there's a Freetown State Forest, which is actually right by the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast, by the way. It's part of the Bridgewater Triangle. There was a group of led by Carl Drew, who was like sort of like a pimp, and a lot of women who were into prostitution or kind of in the fringes of Fall River society. And they started basically gathering together as a cult, according to Robin Murphy, who was sort of like the female ringleader of the group. And they were committing human sacrifices in Freetown State Forest. So women were being killed very sickly, they were being used as part of like a human sacrifice ritual, like a black mass, and multiple women were killed in the 70s. And so there's a show that just came out called Fall River on Epix, and it goes into this case and looking at the players in the case, and they do say that it's part of the Satanic Panic. Because there were headlines in the local newspapers about the murders and the trial associated with it. But there's Robin Murphy and there's Carl Drew. Carl Drew said no, he wasn't doing that, and Robin Murphy says yes, you were. And the rituals were like part of the macabre part of it. Like it was really macabre, like really disgusting what Robin said they did, but Carl's saying that's not what happened and that she was the one doing all these sort of satanic rituals.
Wild. Love it. I love it. I don't know. I find cults really interesting because I have a hard time committing to things that I know I want to do. I mean, much less committing to a bunch of crap that I know I don't want to do. It's always amazing to me when these cults happen. And to be fair, I'm guessing that the Church of Satan that's in Salem is more of an anti-Anton LaVey nihilism, hedonism thing, and a little less of worshiping the Dark Lord.
Exactly. That's sort of like the. I mean, I'm not pro Church of Satan, but I think.
I get you. I mean,
yeah, but I do think that. I think people have a place to. There's been a history of like extreme Christianity and like evangelical Christianity, kind of taking over Salem, and I think all sides should have, and they're progressives. They're atheists, really. They don't believe that there's a heaven or a hell. And a lot of them are witches. So it's more of a movement of kind of like saying, hey, a progressive movement saying like, hey, treat people good. And also the freedom of religion too is kind of like they wanted to have a voice. So yeah, they give tours as well. And so I'm friends with the tour guide at the Church of Satan. It's like, hey, what's up?
Well, hey, Church of Satan guy. Part of this is selfish for no pun intended, lack of a better word. I am on a personal crusade to try to get an actual Satanist on the show. Not a LaVeyan. Like somebody who truly like worships a dark god with cloven feet. And I have never found one. I've been looking all over and I know I'm not going to find one, but still I look.
I have friends that may meet that. Richard Lyle Lillard, he's a Satanist as well. And I can give you his information. I don't know if he will fit the exact what you're looking for,
right.
but he identifies as a Satanist.
Yeah, I've always just been really curious about it, and with all this talk of Satanic Panic and Satanism and witchcraft and stuff like that, there doesn't appear to be any actual Satanists in the description that these churches and these views. What these people fear doesn't actually seem to exist over here, and that's why I'm really curious as to like. Is there somebody who basically says, yeah, I just don't worship. I don't sacrifice people because it's illegal and I go to jail. But I mean, if I could, I totally would because that's part of my religion. You know, it's like, does that person exist? That's what I want to find. But I'm getting way off topic here. We're coming not too far from the end here. You know, where's the best place that people can find your books? Your most recent and what we've been discussing here are Ghosts of Salem and Wicked Salem. Ghosts of Salem, Haunts of the Witch City, and Wicked Salem, Exploring Lingering Lore and Legends. Where's the best place for people to go for those?
Well, right now, I would say go to Amazon or BarnesandNobles.com and type in Sam Baltruces. I have 13 books available, including my upcoming book called Ghost of the American Revolution, which has been bumped again to November. Yes, I would say Amazon, but also bookstores carry the books. And if you go to your bookstore and ask for the book, they will be able to get the book for you. So I say support local indie bookstores as much as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what about Paranormal Rewind? Where's the best place for them to find out?
So if you go to paranormalrewind.com, it's on KCOR, which is based in Las Vegas, and it's available online, and you can listen to the show live 7 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday night on KCOR, or you can go listen to the archives on paranormalrewind.com.
All right. Well, you know, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on, and I don't know if this is less structured, but we're kind of a rambling conversation around here, and I really appreciate having you on. You've been listening to Sam Baltrusis here on Radio Wasteland, and Sam has a new book coming out, Ghosts of the American Revolution, hopefully in November, and hopefully you think of us and come on and talk to us about that book.
I would love to talk about it a lot. Really similar to the Salem witch trials, what happened in during the American Revolution.
Ooh, great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Thanks again.